China Corner is proudly brought to you by the Embassy of the People's Republic of China in Namibia.
Welcome to the 2026 edition of China Corner here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And as most of us have returned from the holidays, have commenced or returned back to work and are planning our particular school years for those of us still on the school, the primary school, secondary school, and on the university levels. Obviously, here on Eagle FM, we start off with the China Corner for this first Wednesday of 2026 that highlights and gives us insight from the recent travel and experience of both rural and urban life in China recently. On today's edition here of the China Corner, we speak to Helvi, who was one of the particular participants on the tour, as well as also you get special insights from myself as I share some of my particular experiences and observations from the sights, the sounds, the people, as well as also the flavors in terms of cuisine, and also looking at the overall presentation of how infrastructure development, rural development, as well as also the opportunity of looking at the improvement of daily life in the province of Jiangxi has occurred. On that, we step into our first interview with the fellow Namibian, as well as also participant to this field excursion or this visit to the province of Jiangxi. We talk to Helvi Shanika in terms of her experience in this regard. All right. Helvi, thank you for taking the time to talk to us here on this particular session of the China Corner. And once again, obviously you and I, just to let the listeners know, we were both participants to this particular 5-day excursion to the province of Jiangxi in China, which is, it's not central. It's not a central province, but it's more a province that is has very interesting history, very rich cultural deposits, if I can use that term, like a mining term. And it was also a province that actually gave us an eye-opening, sort of like a tour of going throughout every particular facet that we saw. But firstly, let me welcome you. Thank you, and good evening.
Thank you, Dois, and thank you for having me.
Helvi, if we start off specifically just getting the general impression that you got during this 5-day excursion, firstly, what impressed you? What were some of the eye-opening scenarios for you and events and some of the stops? And, you know, what can you actually take away from the particular visit to Jiangxi in the 5-day excursion?
So the whole excursion, if I have to say, or the whole experience is or was overwhelming to the extent that, you know, you want to take everything with you. But let me rather just point out a few stuff or a few things that impressed me the most, which is local economic development. That's the impression, because this is the province that plus minus 7 years ago was a rural area. It was more of a rural area place. Mm-hmm. But as we speak today, we are speaking about a province that has created billionaires and millions, hundreds of millionaires through support. I'm talking about now government support to and through community support to especially to the youth. Dwight, I would like to talk about a lecture by Professor Luo Yang a professor at one of the at the ruling party school of China, who told us exactly how they have helped these people, and through projects like baking. Mm. If one is talking about baking in Namibia, you think it's something small, but baking in China created billionaires and millionaires. Mm. And this is just through helping young people, giving them loans And at the same time, you know, loans, we are saying loans, but these are loans that are, you know, tax-free loans that people get and, you know, return. Mm. Is it tax-free or is it interest-free?
It's almost like you have to look at it like a subsidy scenario, but they were loans in a way that was zero interest.
Yes, they said interest-free loans. That's the one that they've given to the young people. And you are not just given that money and allowed to be on your own. You are put under a mentor who has done it, who has experienced it, who has fallen somewhere in life. And they are taking you through the process just to make sure that you also succeed at some point.
Mm.
I would also love to take another, you know, positive aspect of this whole thing, that we are not only taken through these lectures, but we're also taken to some companies that have done several projects in Namibia. And these are the projects that today we look at and we are actually happy about, like the airport road, for example. That has really, really elevated traffic flow and accidents on the road between Windhoek and Jose Akutako. You know, when we went to China the first day, we drove with that road and we were thinking, oh, this road is so beautiful. Little did we know that we're going to meet the very same people that have constructed that bridge, the road and the bridge itself. And that is the CJIC. Is that the CJIC?
That
is Zhongmei.
That was Zhongmei.
It was Zhongmei Engineering. They are the ones that have constructed the bridge to the airport, and it's not just that road, but they've constructed several others, including Oshana Region, some roads in Kavango, and these guys have impressive work ethics. But the biggest part or aspect that we should take with is the fact that these people are getting proper support from government. They are not left to be on their own. We also visited the CJIC. That's the one that have put up a 100-megawatt plant, solar plant in Ospina. I feel this is going to be of quite a major help to Namibia. Of course, they have not done that for free. We should also thank our government for bringing us, companies like them to come and put up something that will, you know, take away some of issues, electrical issues in the country. And I understand that with this plant, we would be able to supply to other countries as well, to neighboring countries. Basically, that was my impression. Oh, let me not forget about Shanghai, our experience in that beautiful restaurant. You know, of course, that was the experience, but I'm for development, and I wish we can learn a lot from the development, from the fact that, you know, the youth, especially youth empowerment. I am for development mostly.
100%. Now, if we look primarily at the visits that we also had in this particular excursion, Helvi, specifically the contrast between what we saw in the administrative capital of Jiangxi, that being Nanchang, and then when we went out of the city, Nanchang itself, to the two lovely villages, that being Diaoyuan and Shenshan, where we obviously saw how rural economic development occurred and took place, one being of a both being of tourism, but the one having more a rich cultural scenario to it. The other also had culture, but you could see two facets of tourism actually being utilized to the fullest extent. That rural-urban contrast and then the deep dive into the rural development, what did you also see from these particular if we can call it events or chapters in our visit to Jiangxi?
What I can say is, Jiangxi province in general, it does not really matter where you are, whether you are in the rural area or you are in town. Economically, you will still be okay. Mm. Or you will actually make a difference. Let me give an example. Let me maybe start. Our last place was Xinshan village. Mm. I'm going to start there because I will eventually come back. But this is a village deep in the rural areas. You know, you drive through the mountains and long distance from the city center, if I have to say, to that village, deep into the mountains. Mm. But again, when we went there, the villagers were living well, not just living well, making meaningful contribution to the economy of the country itself. Mm. Person in the village supplying maybe hotels and restaurants in the country with chopsticks. Oh, you know, when someone is saying a chopstick, you think it's just a chopstick. It's a stick, yeah. Mm. But these people are cashing in millions of dollars just from making chopsticks, from growing bamboos, you know, like you are growing a bamboo and, taking it to the last part of it, like when we are talking about now value addition here. Mm. You don't just grow a bamboo. You grow a bamboo, you cut it off, and until you come to the point of turning it into a chopstick, and you cash money to your bank. Mm. The interesting story of a village is Xinshan, that was a very very impoverished village until 2016, when the president visited this village and realized how his people were living. And a few days thereafter, these people were assisted financially. I believe they were also given machinery to come up with all this. Mm. And it did not end with chopsticks. It also, the people of this village are so much into tourism. Tourism, that they are one of the biggest tourism attraction village in the region. They are also, what I've also picked up is that they are also using their traditional natural, let me rather say natural resources to turn them into economic enterprises. They are making sweets from rice, they are making sweets from sugar cane, they are making any type of food from, and they are not just making them, they are packaging them properly. I have a package, I came with one pack from there that I've kept in my office. I don't even want to open it. I wish I can, I'm taking this to my village women so that they can also see how they can, we have Embe, for example, Oshide in Kunene region. Mm. We can see how we can package these things and make them, in a way that they are attractive, that some tourists can come and just pick them up. Mm. And by adding value, it means we are also adding, making the thing to be more, to be bought, to be attractive, and add some value to it that it can you can sell it at a better price.
Yeah, I still remember the sticky rice situation, where I also because I was obviously one of the guys that was busy pounding the rice as well. But then obviously you know one of our party members, that being Naita, then took it with to Shanghai, not to Shanghai, to Jingangshan, the other town where we slept over the hostel accommodation, and it was prepared there as well as an interesting sort of like a flat cake. Not a flat cake. It was kept as is. Obviously we could see how you know this. That the culture in cuisine also was being promoted to us because we didn't eat much outside foods that we are used to. We ate predominantly the foods, the cuisine, the local cuisine that you found in every spot. What was your impression about that?
Basically, everywhere we go or everywhere we went while we were there, we just ate the food that were locally produced, that was locally produced. And you can tell that as much as these food were similar, they were differently prepared. Basically, they were prepared according to the culture of a specific place. Let me say, for example, in Shanghai, you are eating your spicy rice. But then when you go to the Jiaoyuan village, that the ancient village, again, the rice was prepared differently. In fact, I've noticed that there were at least three different the types of recipes of rice that were there, including rice drink. Can you remember that?
Yeah.
Rice juice or, you know,
there was
everything.
There was the other one that was made from that hot drink.
It was rice, and it tasted like oshikundu or maheo. It tasted like maheo, which means for us, when we have our food, we prepare it almost the same.
Yeah.
But in China, I've noticed that you can have a 20-meal course, but at least six of them are of the same product, but prepared differently, or prepared differently, in fact, sometimes according to the place where you are.
Mm.
Yeah, you have your sticky rice, you have your spicy rice, you have your rice drink, you have, you know, And you have rice sweets as well.
Yeah.
Everything rice, but prepared differently. And it all tastes nice. And I'm sure if it has to be sold, you know, it's just proper. We can learn a lot from these rural areas in China.
And there was obviously also the interesting thing that we saw towards the end before we headed to Shanghai. Actually, if we look at the most important aspect, Helvi, that got us moving throughout the province was the high-speed train as well as also the interconnectedness of the transport systems and networks. What did you see also in that particular scenario? Because I was really impressed by specifically the if you can call it like the regional, for us it would be regional, but it would be provincial road network, which was good throughout. I mean, technically we didn't see any potholes, not that we can talk about potholes so far, but we didn't see anything in that regard. We only saw good surfaces for driving. From the city Nanchang to the smaller provincial city that we saw before we headed to the Living Museum Village. And everything was just, you know, good infrastructure that connects all urban and small settlements. How did that look to you?
I did not expect to see any pothole in China.
Firstly, I also didn't try to look for any potholes. But it was such good surfaces to drive on, because not once did we have except for going to the mountains where we had the going up scenario, but everything was flat, instantaneously connected us, and you could estimate very well, you know, how far we could drive. And what did you look into that? What did you see in that scenario?
I want to talk about the fast train.
Yeah.
The fast train, which can be the biggest solution to our transport system in Namibia. Man, I just wish we can just have one train to that is connecting regions.
Mm.
I mean, not train, but a railway line that connects all the regions.
Mm.
Man.
It was really impressive, right?
First and foremost, with all the accidents we are experiencing in this country, with all the rising fuel prices, with everything, a fast train. It doesn't even have to be that fancy. Just a train that can take me from Windhoek to Oshakati in 4 or 5 hours. I'm happy. Or even just in a normal 7 hours.
Yeah, or even 3 hours even, because I remember...
No, the fast train, that is faster. Let's not ask for this thing.
I mean, you know, a Christmas wish is a Christmas wish, Alvi.
Yes, let us start small. But yeah. I'm saying even, you know, I would rather go in a train and travel 7 hours to the north, as opposed to driving 7 hours to the north.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
Because I feel it's not just about the fact that I don't have to drive. It's also about my safety. You know, the trains are the safest. And we are now, at the moment we are facing the festive season. You have to go to the single quarters and see how people are crumbling, trying to get into, you know,
into
the
buses. Small buses, yeah.
Go to single quarters, go to Monte Cristo and just see. But if we have a train, some of these transport issues, of course, I don't want to take out the bread from the mouth of our brothers and sisters in the transport industry, but I'm sure there can be a solution. And they themselves, sometimes we leave everything to government, but maybe they themselves can also see how they can come on board and see, you know, with all those buses, they can actually capitalize on that.
Mm.
Let's do joint ventures. In China, people are doing joint ventures.
Mm.
Our people in the transport business can also do joint ventures. Do joint ventures with Transnamib, for example, and see how you can capitalize on it and how you can benefit from this whole thing.
Mm.
Yeah. Do away with some of dangerous practices. I tell you, 7 hour, 12 hour drives that we are doing are dangerous, fatigueless, everything. It's festive season.
And then there's obviously also sort of like the very slow, if we can call it like the upgrading of the national road network system, which in its own right, it gives bonuses and it gives benefits to the drivers and also the overall transport system. But you still have, like you highlighted now, the hazardous scenarios that still persist in certain parts of the Namibian road network.
Exactly.
Now,
you are correct.
Now,
I feel let's drive on the road on a shorter distance, like from Windhoek to Oshivarongo.
Mm.
But if you are going to Oshakati, if you are going to Luderitz, from Windhoek,
take a train from there.
Take a train from there, yes.
Yeah, because it highlights us, it takes the stress off the other mode of transport and then facilitates in that scenario. Just like we actually also saw.
Let's revive the dream of the founding father, you know.
Mm.
That was actually the dream of the founding father, railway and road networks from Cape to Cairo. I always, yes, if we can revive that and learn from China,
And obviously it was all about benefiting the local population, which is the one key concern that which was part of the exercise why we were also in China, to see what takeaways can we take away from this. Helvi, we obviously saw that there was also one interesting thing. I know Namibia is very far away from this, but it was the amount of electric vehicles. What did you like about that?
Okay.
Or should I rather ask, what do you think about that?
No, it's actually a good thing, but I'm saying this with a selfishness heart. Eh?
Mm.
You know, Namibia, we have recently just discovered oil and, you know what I mean.
Mm.
So, with electric vehicles, they are good, but I'm thinking about our business, which is oil. I'm thinking about us promoting, but from the consumer point of view, let me be serious now. From the consumer point of view, the amount of electric vehicles in China is very good.
Mm.
And from environmental conservation point of view, those are the safest. We nowadays we have so much of air pollution happening, and the reason why I'm seeing countries now like China and other developed countries are moving away from certain practices like fuel, it's because they want to keep their environment clean.
Mm.
So the amount of electric vehicle is impressive in China, and I've also we have learned from our guides that if you buy an electric vehicle in China, you get government subsidy, which means they are actually encouraging people to use electric vehicle as opposed to fuel powered vehicles.
Mm. And which was a very good thing, because that subsidy was something that translates directly into your tax, the individual's tax for itself. So it actually showed how the subsidy mechanism is also applied, that it actually benefits the person on the ground. And then if we just take a look, primarily, Helvi, just to end our particular talk, I'll ask you the same three-letter word that our media colleague in China, in Jiangxi specifically, Zoe, asked us. If you had to think about a three-letter phrase, in terms of just to identify what you saw and your impressions of the visit to Jiangxi, what three-letter phrase would you use and why?
I say local economic development, in a sense that I'm not going to speak on behalf of the whole, to say China as a country, because I have visited Jiangxi province.
Mm.
I'll say local economic development in the Jiangxi province. That's how I can describe that province, in a sense that they are so much into developing their very own people, in helping them economically, in developing them, in assisting them, in coaching, in mentorship, in financial, you know, everything. That's what they do in China. I mean, in Jiangxi village. And it does not matter where you are.
Mm.
In fact, some people in the cities, they are saying people in the villages of Jiangxi are better off than those ones in town.
Mm.
So, as I said, local economic development in Jiangxi province, people are actually moving from town to the villages, as opposed to my country where we are all leaving our rural areas just to the city because we feel that is where opportunities are. So it is time for us also to start developing where we are economically and turn our villages in some living museum, because there's so much that we can do in our villages. Let's start documenting the footsteps of our, I mean, is it footsteps of our leaders?
Yeah.
Let's start documenting them. Let's start documenting the lives of well-known people in our villages. They are there. They are there. We speak good about them when they are alive. We visit their houses when they are alive. And then once they are gone, we forget to turn these houses in museums. We forget to turn them in some sort of, tourism.
Or cultural sites, yeah.
Cultural sites. Yes. For example, let me say the house of the founding father, we can turn it into a museum.
Mm-hmm.
Not his house or his parents' house in Nganjera. The house of Ipumbuya Shirongo, we can do that. The, you know, all the houses, even the current houses, the houses of the current chiefs, the house of the late Koima Riwako, we can turn that into some cultural site, museum and whatnot. The house of, you know, all the kings and chiefs, we have them. We just need to think differently. It was, as I said, that was an eye-opening trip, and I've realized that we have everything at our disposal. We just need to use it.
Exactly, exactly. Helvi, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners about this insightful visit. And then once again, it was actually good to have this particular discussion.
Thank you so much, Dwight. And I said thank you for having me, and I thank the listeners.
Secondly, this gets us into my particular experience. As you would hear, my fellow Eagle FM colleague, that being Helmut, conducts the interview with my, with me, Dwight, as we dissect as well as also look into some of the experiences that I had there in Jiangxi province.
Dwight, China's development has been a story of prosperity and clear goal settings with a real results being achieved. This tour to the province of Jiangxi and other major tourist attractions have visibly showcased these goals and their results. From your exposure over the past 4 to 5 days, from Nanchang to Jing'an to Jinggangshan, what impression did you get from the first sight of each stage of the tour?
Thanks a lot, Helmut, for, you know, for this particular question. And the interesting thing is that we always get, you always get, you know, information very scarcely about, you know, people that have really visited places like China. And specifically the various provinces. Obviously, the most famous province is the one that contains Beijing, the capital of China. But when we went to the province of Jiangxi, I did not have a completely clear idea about the significance of this province. The obviously the interactions that we've had with not just with officials but also with academics and then also various locals on the ground, each one of them gave a unique perspective about this region. This region's particular significance in the goals it was trying to achieve, and what this actually meant for each of the people. For example, when we first started off in the capital of the province Jiangxi, specifically in the city of Nanchang, we were given a background, Helmut, of how Nanchang has grown. There was a photo we were shown. Now, we went to one of the historic sites after some of the visits, specifically in Nanchang. So the first three visits is we met three corporations, one being the, it's almost like the media corporation in Nanchang, which is the JICC. We met, and then two construction engineering. Well, no, one was a construction engineering company, and the other was a economic development company. And each, but the first two, the two companies have direct links to Namibia because they've worked in Namibia before. They've helped with construction and with infrastructure projects, and a lot of the people actually they speak very fondly of Namibia and the various regions in Namibia that they've worked in. However, when after these three particular so like official visits, we went to a historic site in Nanchang known as the Tangwen Pavilion, Helmut. This pavilion Now, when we think of a pavilion, you think of a stand of a, you think about the pavilion in a football stadium, in a sports stadium. No, this is literally like, it's almost not a palace, but it's almost like a guest house situation, which has been there for 1,600 years, a building for 1,600 years.
Standing.
Standing. Yes, it's been burnt down, you know, like multiple times.
Renovated.
Yeah, you know, and restored and burnt and yeah. burnt down again and restored. But just think of that. Having the ability as a Namibian to stand in a building that's 1,600 years old.
Yeah.
Then the lady that gave us a tour, she explained to us, because when you're standing in the pavilion,
yeah,
on this side of the, because the Tangwin Pavilion stands literally on the river, on the bank of a major river that runs through the city of Nanchang, and you can see both sides. Of, you know, you're obviously seeing both sides of the riverbank.
Yeah.
Now, when you're standing on the pavilion, the reason the pavilion was selected, or that site that was selected for,
the specific location,
was selected by sort of like the youngest brother of the Chinese emperor back then, who was then made the governor of that province of Jiangxi, or the city of Nanchang. And he decided to build the pavilion there. And why he built it there was primarily because of the view that specific spot provided. You know, back then, you know, the higher ups back then, these guys had very, you know, that they had an artistic sight, you know, and they always sought out the best.
They had an eye for the best panoramic view.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the Tangwin Pavilion gives you. But when, we stood at the, I think it was the fourth or something floor, or sixth floor that you can go up to, because they built a lift, you know, an elevator in the pavilion, which makes it easier because the stairwell is slightly narrow and it makes it difficult for people moving in both directions.
Yeah.
So when we stood in on the floor that we were shown the lovely view of the pavilion and the side of the river where the Tangwin Pavilion is built is known as the old city of Nanchang. So it's the older part. It's the newer part. It's the older part. On the other end of the riverbank, meaning the opposite riverbank, is the new city. Now, between 1992 or 1993, there was a photo that was taken. And I don't know if you heard about the rapid construction and building of Chinese cities specifically, like Shenzhen and who was the other city that also grew so rapidly in a very short while, you know, within 30
yes,
years.
Yes, it's one that's associated with rapid infrastructure development.
Exactly. So in this past 30 years,
yeah,
that other side of Nanchang on the opposite river grew exponentially so quickly.
Development-wise.
That, you know, it literally, you no longer could see the mountain range behind that new part.
Yeah.
Now, it was very impressive, the rapid growth, because it obviously meant, you know, that new developments were coming in, new opportunities were developed. And this was part of sort of like the learning curve that we were also introduced to, the five of us. Now, the pavilion, Helmut, is, okay, I know I'm talking a lot about the pavilion, but it's a very impressive structure.
I can imagine.
It's a very impressive structure. It's impressively also how it is installed within, you know, the modern surrounding, the modern city around it of Nanchang.
Yeah.
I mean, it sort of like takes you back, you know, you can see the scenic routes, you can see the everyday way of life, you can see how the local residents of Nanchang, how they, you know, live and interact around this historic installation in their city. And then, do you know what's the nice thing also? We were actually explained by the tour guide that the pavilion is a great site for cosplayers. You know those people that love dressing up in sort of like historic clothing and the likes?
Yeah.
There was one lady there. She was literally dressed up specifically of that specific period when the pavilion
was built.
Was it 643 or 653 AD? Literally, there was a lady there. The downside was, you know, you can't easily, because she's there obviously taking her photos.
Yeah.
But it was an exciting thing to see. And it also has like a botanical garden set up, you know, like, yeah, very beautiful plants that form part of the overall installation of the pavilion. And overall, when you've got to look at the city of Nanchang, I mean, it's like being in a completely different space. Firstly, it's not something that I expected, you know, because I haven't heard anything about the city of Nanchang.
Yeah.
But just looking at the city's particular, the traffic flow, the discussions that we had, about, you know, art, because the first thing we observed was these different number plates. So here's the thing, Helmut, talking to our guide, the guide for the tour, Perfume, we asked her, what's up with the different number plates? Because you get a regular number plate. And then there's a, I think it's a white green. There's a blue number plate and there's a white green number plate. And she explained that it differentiates between which is a combustion engine, meaning diesel or petrol,
yeah,
and which is an electric car. And
by license plate.
By license plate. And she explained that, you know, some of the things that we keep talking about here in Namibia and that we hear from a broader African context, you know, how do you integrate these newer technologies? So you, if you buy an electric car in Nanchang, the opportunities there that you can earn tax rebates.
That's a good incentive.
If you buy an environmentally safe car, an environmentally friendly car, you can earn some sort of a tax rebate from your personal tax as a regular resident.
Yeah.
Which makes things interesting because primarily you see the incentive discussion. A second scenario was also the, you know, the interesting thing in terms of the various infrastructure that's brought in to the, you know, to facilitate from cycling to motorcycles, even the scooters, the very thing that I like the most, scooters. Helmut, have you ever seen a 12-year-old or 15-year-old driving themselves to school on a scooter and it's completely electric?
I wouldn't say I have.
So the sidewalks accommodate, yeah, the sidewalks and the extra bicycle lanes and motorcycle lanes,
mm-hmm,
because a motorcycle lane is not incorporated.
It's separate into, from its bicycle lane and the it's, and main also, road, and which also is from reserved for the cars.
Exactly. So it's literally separated from these, from all, and you literally see the you know, the distinctions.
Yeah.
And they're literally also cordoned off, meaning there are special cones or divisions set up. So first and foremost, that was the one impressive thing.
Yeah.
The second scenario was also the access to transport. So yeah, there is public transport. But it's a scenario of what you can access if you're a resident. You know, can you access a motorcycle? Can you access an electric scooter? Can you access a car?
Without having to buy one.
Well, I suspect you do buy your own. But it's just the parking, the where you leave it.
Yeah.
Because in many cases, you sometimes see those things that we get to see on TV, you know, how people park their motorcycles and bicycles, you know, outside.
Yeah.
Literally. It's a similarity that you get impressed by because, obviously our first fear here in Namibia or in Windhoek is, you know, things might.
Asset forfeiture.
yeah, exactly. The asset forfeiture scenario. But when you get to see how, people interact and live, you know, their lives every day in a city like Nanchang. Another thing, Helmut, obviously this is a city that has more than 1 million people. I won't lie to you. A city with more than 1 million people, I've never seen such a clean city. I've been to Johannesburg. I've been to Cape Town. I've been to Pretoria. I've seen parts of Russia. I'll tell you today, Hamid. And Russia, that's the city of Sochi, has got like, what, 500,000 people, as big as Windhoek. But Sochi had it, you know, that snow and, you know, that combination of snow and dirt and water, you know, it makes that brownish snow coloring.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to say that Sochi was also, you know,
messy yeah,
or dirty, but Nanchang is spotless. A city that has so much infrastructure, spotless, Helmut.
With 1 million people.
Well, more than 1 million. I say more than 1 million. here's where things also get interesting, is when we moved outside of the city to the rural areas. But each of the rural stops that we got,
yeah,
if you get the chance, I'm impressed by the high-speed rail. I'm literally impressed. I fell asleep in that hour because it was so soft. It was so,
yeah,
it was so smooth. But within an hour, we covered 200 kilometers. In an hour, 200 kilometers. Imagine driving for 200 kilometers.
In an hour?
No. Not in an hour. In an hour, you'll be driving.
When you're driving, like in your own car. Oh, no, that's good.
That'll be what, 180? 180 kilometers. You're way above the speed level already.
Yeah.
In Namibia, and it's unsafe to drive at that speed.
Yeah.
It's high speed rail. 200 Ks, 1 hour. We got to the next stop, got into the bus, and it was once again the smoothest drive I've ever seen. Not because of the bus driver or the bus, the road. An interesting thing, Helmut, to cite from there was that you could see that each and every component of transport is connected to each other. Meaning, we went to a train station where the high-speed rail is. Mm. At the train station, we get onto the train. The train takes you to the next stop where you have to go. You get onto a bus there. We got into a bus there, yes. You can see the connectivity element of everything.
For example, from rail to a bus.
From rail to road and so forth. Because you could just imagine yourself being a regular tourist and you understand, okay, so this is how the elements of transport are connected to each other so that you get to the destination you want to get to. Another important thing is also when you have to look like from airport to road and from road to rail and from rail to road back to road again. All those particular things were also the impressive connectivity elements.
The transition.
Yeah. Because if you are someone that, let's say you don't live there, you should be able to hail, let's say a taxi or a cab or something that can take you from, let's say from the airport to the next stop. The interesting thing was obviously that, you'll obviously, that's not something that we interacted with because we obviously had, you know, guides helping us connect to every particular spot, but you sometimes imagine those scenarios. Okay. So how do I get from the Nanchang, airport to, from the Nanchang airport to the next stop that I've got to go to? And yes. It's sizable cities, it's sizable settlements, but it's so easy to navigate. Literally easy to navigate. Super easy, Helmut. Now, when we got to the rural areas, the rural areas were the next particularly impressive step because part of the exposure and part of the experience that I had specifically in the rural communities of Jiangxi province was that we went to an ancient village. For us in Namibia, you can call it a living museum.
Yeah.
The particular subject matter we've spoken out before. And the second scenario was we went to a village, Helmut, that was literally transformed from a village that made, what was it? Was it 10,000 renminbi or 20,000 renminbi per year? It's annual GDP that village to something that's way into the hundreds of thousands.
Right now.
Just from targeted investment into improving infrastructure, talking and consulting with the inhabitants of the village, asking them, hey, listen, you can obviously see that making chopsticks that cost, what was it? What were we told? 200 chopsticks in a bundle would cost something like 15 renminbi. 200 chopsticks, 15 renminbi. And that's all you can, you know, that's the only skill set, the only income that you could generate. To literally transforming it to becoming a central tourism hub, which speaks centrally to the known history of the now known history of China, of modern day China, specifically being that it's the village where Chairman Mao hid during the early formation, specifically, you know, of the firstly of the Chinese Civil War, and then, you know, how everything sprang up from there.
Yeah.
So tapping into this known history, because this village, the village of Qian, this village was the village where President Xi Jinping visited in 2016. So you paid a visit to the village. The village only had a two-track leading into it. And then President Xi saw, you know what? Since this is a village of such cultural importance, firstly, historic, obviously, and then the cultural importance, it needs to be, you know, it needs to, if you think about it, it's like saying everyone needs to enjoy the fruits of development. The local authority extended services, helped in fixing infrastructure, like some of the homes. Some, about 10 homes first were fixed up, Helmut. Out of the 10, 3 to 4 were assessed for being unfit for habit, for, you know, for... Out of those 10, for occupation. That's how old some of them were. They were restored to such a level. You would not, if you go there now, or actually if I showed you some of the photos, you would not believe that these were structures that were in one stage unfit for occupation. They were fixed up, completely renovated, and then the residents of the village were asked, what new kind of what you call it, not vocation, but what's the term? Sort of like, what new kind of economic activities do you want to incorporate into your everyday life? First one was tourism. Remember what we kept saying? Tourism is one of the easiest.
It's a good place to start.
It's a good place to start. It's one of the easiest sectors in today in the modern economic world to tap into, because it firstly means that you've got to improve on some things, or you have to identify something that you can offer. And literally, it's those two specific elements that the local villagers highlighted. Firstly, we want to show people the importance of this village. And secondly, we want to show the, you know, some other features, you know, like having hospitality and the ability for people to sleep over there. Because the nice thing is, Helmut, you can walk up, it is a hill. You can walk up the hill because the villagers have a type of a plantation on top of that hill. And then behind that hill is another hill that you can walk up to that has bungalows. Those bungalows allow you to see over the village this direction that you came from.
The village, it's all about the views.
It's all about the views, but it's a beautiful view.
Yeah.
And if you look over the village, you know, behind you, as you know, if you're now positioned in that bungalow,
yeah.
If you look at the village behind you, the important thing is that many people will not know that when Chairman Mao them were in close proximity of that village and when they were based there, because just behind that village is where much of the battles also took place. So
the one with the bungalows.
No. It's the one literally where it's literally in the mountain range of the Jinganshan mountain. The mountain's name is Jinganshan. The battle took place there between obviously the opposite sides, that was led by Chiang Kai-shek and Chairman Mao and his second in command, Judah. If everything takes is literally connected to that mountain range where we went to.
Yeah.
So if you had the opportunity of viewing a photos that we were shown of what that mountain range looked like back in the 1920s of China, specifically of that province of Jiangxi. How much you would not believe it that all those trees were cut down or were somehow destroyed from, you know, the conflict scenario.
Yeah.
But if you view Jing'anshan today, it's probably one of the best sceneries you'll ever see.
Undergone some kind of reforestation since then.
Actually, reforestation, yes. Yeah. And a lot of rehabilitation, yes. Because it also factors into, now, where we were at Jian, the village of Jian, that is obviously the second stop coming from, you know, from the city of Nanchan. We stopped at another historic village, because it's literally a whole sort of like preserved village that showed where Chairman Mao stayed. He stayed with a doctor and her husband. All of this has been sort of like preserved, well preserved. There was also another building. Yeah, where the first sort of like meetings of the Communist Party of China took place. There was another building right next to it. And it was sort of like the first time that all these meetings happened, because it was sort of like the first time that Chairman Mao actually engaged with people and asked them, you know, what's the issue? What do you guys want to see? And many of them were saying, you know, we've got these issues. And because he showed up there with all these soldiers, Chairman Mao. And everyone was asked, and he needed to sort of like have that connection back to, you know, the people on the ground and ask them, so what are some of the issues in your village, in your vicinity, in your zone? What do you guys want to look at? And the guide explained to us that in many cases, this was the first time for the regional or the local branch heads of the Communist Party meeting Chairman Mao. And they discussed things, and various particular plans were laid out. And then everything moved from there, because obviously there was still a war to fight. And then they moved to the Jing'anshan mountain range. Now that's the next stop where things become interesting. Because if you stand at the particular sort of like the two historic sites where the two mortars are, literally two mortars, if you are told that, you know, that these guys only had seven mortars to fire, defending a whole mountain range. Yes, you could literally say that, yes, you know, ammunition was a commodity back then. They literally had seven mortars to fire. So we were shown these historic elements, specifically in the three connected sort of like rural, cultural, and tourism attractions.
Yeah.
I'll specifically put my top favorite is the ancient village, which is the first stop before we got to the mountain range itself. And the cultural village was just
phenomenal.
It was out of this world. I mean, I was literally feeling I was in a medieval setting back then. And it's actually a famous tourist attraction for couples, you know, who want to come and marry. We were shown a massive tree.
So it's not just Paris.
No. No. It's for couples. But this village, the ancient village, was literally, it takes you back a couple of hundred years.
Yeah.
Because the village is so old that in itself it is a living museum. Everyone who works there comes from the village itself. So the old buildings were renovated, and where the modern, let's say, the people that are, I almost said indigenous to the village, but the people that come from the village literally live like right next door to it. Because we were shown a map, and the only part we explored was the part where, you know, everyone comes to, with the little water features, they have like this massive, like, it's not an amphitheater, but it's an amphitheater, a miniature amphitheater situation.
Yeah.
But you sit in a circle, and you get to experience sort of like this romantic setting there, you know, in the rural community that just gives you this feeling of what it feels like. Now, in that ancient village, there is a building
that has various plaques hung that were put on. It's literally outside the building, which advertises the performance of young people that came from the village. So before modern day China, as you understand it, there was a way that they would communicate. Let's say your local village communicates to you, yes, Helmut passed grade 12. And then everyone goes like, yay, Helmut passed grade 12.
The whole community?
Yeah. Jeez, and okay. Let's say if Helmut, with that passing, goes to, let's say, the local university or the local academy or whatever, because at that stage it wasn't a university, it was like an academy.
Yeah.
Then it also gets highlighted on this public plaque situation. So it was very interesting to know. It was insightful. Because, like I said, the ancient village sort of like, you know,
takes you back in time.
It literally takes you back, just like the Tangwen Pavilion. But yeah, so in a nutshell, Helmut, that was sort of like the main features of the discussion, of the things that impressed me a lot of the visit.
That is, I mean, I'm just listening to it and I'm really impressed, especially, I mean, for some, I like mountains, so the mountain range would be my first stop.
No, it's very beautiful specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, on the subject of rural development, remember back when we were asked to use three words to describe rural tourism and development in Jiangxi, and about how and why we use those three words of our choices. What comes to mind when you look back at each phase of the tour in terms of history, culture, and commercial achievements?
Okay, I'll condense this one, Helmut. Specifically for my three words, I'll put it there like, inclusive economic development. The why I say inclusive, to connect and lead the next two words, was primarily because everyone there was connected in the economy in one way or another.
Yeah.
So if you were the Jian village that President Xi Jinping visited back in 2016, you now see the sort of like the fruits of that visit. And the particular sort of like value that visit played to the local inhabitants of the village.
Yeah.
If you visited the ancient village, you could see literally how one cultural element is incorporated and thus transforms a ancient installation to that it resonates to modern day young people, specifically if you're young couples, specifically if you're someone, for example, that wants to just get out of the city a little bit and you want to go visit something, you know, like a lovely setting that I mean, it's escapism basically, but it literally lives up to the word escapism. And in that scenario, you get to enjoy a little bit of scenic history, scenic experiences, scenic interactions. We only slept there for the night. We only overnighted. But the nice thing was that we had the opportunity of experiencing ancient China. If you're in the cities, yes, it's metropolitan. It's well-connected transport. You can literally see everyone is in some way playing a role, going to school, doing their part, working, busy with various particular aspects of everyday life. So it's an important thing that I use the word inclusive economic development, because you need to uplift everyone's lives and everyone needs to have a participatory role to play in doing their part. So it was straightforward. That's why I said I had to condense it so much.
Indeed. Now, based on your observation of the tour, do you think we have similar policies to achieve the exact goals that you witnessed in Jiangxi province? And what are some of the similarities that you can reflect on that is achievable, say, within the next 5 years?
In the next 5 years, we can literally replicate what the cultural tourism element.
Yeah.
For example, in our NDP6, we are stressing that everyone needs to have a participatory role in cultural tourism. I believe that's the first point we can start off from.
Yeah.
This obviously also means that everybody needs to be involved, whichever region you find yourself in, Namibia, because if I look at province like Jiangxi.
Yeah.
So remember when I made reference to how the nodes of transport are connected to each other, so that if you come from an airport, you can find transport that can take you to, let's say, your place of accommodation. From accommodation, if you want to go somewhere else and you want to go further, you get on a train. The train takes you to the next stop. That stop then connects you to road. Everything has to be connected like that. So that means transport plays a crucial role in that basic facilitation. Second scenario is everyone who participates in tourism has to position themselves in a way that they are close to those transport nodes. Because, Hamoud, we were connected so easily. The hotel we stayed in was literally turns off from one of the major highways in the city of Nanchang. Meaning you can easily get out of that. When you drive away from that hotel, you easily get into the main flow of things. So you can see the connectivity element. A second element is each and every Namibian in what we saw in Nanchang and in Jiangxi, on a whole, is that everyone can participate. Everyone. In our NDP6 scenario, we speak of an inclusive approach, which is also what I referenced in terms of what I saw with, if I had to, you know, for the three-word selection. We literally can be inclusive in our tourism.
Yeah.
Our tourism can literally, as the country of Namibia, for our size, it can be a game changer, because I saw how just transport plays its facilitation role, but everything else just, you know, sort of like bounces from transport. So yeah, if we combined, you know, the investment in transport and the investment in tourism, both of them can merge. Both of them can actually facilitate a good package to any visitor. Any Namibian that wants to work in it can participate in it as well. Yeah.
So mostly it's the smooth transition between different modes of transport, from air to rail to road.
Yeah. And then connecting to various sort of like elements of the economy. So this can be tourism, but in tourism you obviously find hospitality and transport and what's the other one's name, catering and all those other aspects. But everything can literally benefit from how transport connects it to that sector. Yeah.
And in Jingangshan area, we observed a great heritage and culture and cultural investment to ensure that the area has a strong appeal to the local and national tourism markets who visit the mountainous area a lot. Is that something that impressed you, though?
Yes, specifically because much of it was very friendly. Okay, firstly, everyone that assisted us in terms of understanding that this speaks, the cultural tourism element is a prized gem that has to be sort of like the mainstay, if I can say mainstay, selling point for a tourist. Because Helmut, if I take you to a mountain range here in Namibia, the first things you'll obviously ask is, okay, so what's the significance of a mountain range? What happened here? Were there people here? Who were the people involved here? What activities did they do? How long ago was this? And how well preserved is this for anyone and everyone to experience the same experience that you experienced at that time visiting a mountain range, you know, over and over?
Yeah.
One of the first things that I always learned in sort of like my marketing is that you've got to be able to replicate the same experience when it comes to services, specifically the service economy.
Yeah.
You've got to replicate the same experience to every customer over and over and over. Meaning, show them the same locations, explain the same major events that took place there. And that's literally what the tour guides, the local guides in the mountain range of Jingangshan showed us. And you could see this easily identifiable historic photos and pictures, because one of the places there in the mountain range was a barracks building that the soldiers back then used. Still standing, it now has a curio shop, meaning it must sell these small little
souvenirs.
Souvenirs.
Yeah.
But the view is pretty awesome. The drive there was pretty good. And it's not like you here in Namibia, you go literally bushwhacking or bundubashing to get to the mountain. There, everything was smooth. Yeah. You know, the road gets you there and you come down the same road. So yeah, once again, access to the regional economy speaks to, how good the infrastructure is to access the rural economies as well. So yeah, I was impressed, but everyone of the rural economy, of the rural communities, knew the significance of the product. They knew that tourists would be interested, and they know how to show the tourists around to the most important sort of like sights and sounds, or sights and experiences. Yeah.
China Corner was proudly brought to you by the Embassy of the People's Republic of China in Namibia.